I'm joined today by interesting guest, Jackie Gingrich Cushman. And if that middle name sounds familiar, that's because it is. Jackie is the daughter of a former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives and current political heavyweight Newt Gingrich. And Jackie, Jackie is the author of a new book called The Essential American, 25 Documents and Speeches That Every American Should Read. So I'm interested to find out what those were. So Jackie, are you there?
I'm here, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. So this book is a compendium of documents and speeches and produced in their entirety, I'd imagine, and then commentary to follow.
You're exactly right. I pulled together 25 documents and speeches, and the title really says it all, The Essential American, what we thought was really essential for people to have for reference to read. And then in front of each one, as you said, I did an introduction. I really gave just the basic, you know, what was happening at the time, who was involved, why was it important, what was the response on many occasions, and then also how is it applicable still today.
Okay. Now, obviously, there are some ones that most people know about. You got the Gettysburg Address in there. You've got Lincoln's second inaugural, which is obviously a very poetic. Was that the one with the Better Angels? No, the Better Angels of Our Nation was the first inaugural.
But you know, second inaugural, I think, is my personal very favorite speech out of this entire book, because it is so heartfelt. It's when he talks about they read from the same Bible, they prayed to the same God. He talks about how hard the Civil War is, and it really does. It's heart-wrenching, and in the end, he says, you know, with malice toward none and fury towards all,
right.
He ends it all. So it really is an incredible.
And then he delivers that, and he dies, what, 2 months later?
Exactly, six, seven weeks later he dies.
Six, yeah.
I mean, he's been through everything. He knows it's all but over. And then, to your point, he doesn't know it, but then you know that he doesn't have much longer to live.
Right. Do you get the sense that in the speech that he thinks he doesn't have much longer to live?
I think so. I think in the speech, what I saw, I spent a lot of time researching both the people and the speeches involved in this document. And what I saw through Lincoln, we include four Lincoln, three speeches in the Emancipation Proclamation, and he's an interesting figure. You can see he was faithful when he took office, but he became more faithful during the Civil War. And you can really see in that last address that he really understood that he was an instrument in the hand of God. And it really comes through in a very, I think, it really
from what
incredible way.
Heard, there was that episode where he goes to Richmond, what was it, about a week, two before he died or something like that, occupied Richmond, and he walks through the streets and, you know, a lot of the slave population was in Richmond and turned out ex-slave population at that point. And it was a very moving, somber, huge experience. At that point, Richmond was a burned out shell of a city. And from what I've heard, that really touched him and kind of, you know, made him think apocalyptic or more religiously than he had in his past. I mean, who in that situation, who wouldn't?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because, you know, at the end of the second inaugural, he goes back to the White House. And Frederick Douglass, who was a free, you know, a free black man, came to him and said, "Mr. Lincoln, that was a sacred effort." Mm-hmm. And I really think it was. I really think the war changed him. I think he realized how hard it was for the nation and how much it wrenched everybody. But I think
him
he
personally.
Also, he ran his second inaugural. He ran in, you know, no peace but for victory. I mean, his whole thing was about we have to be victorious. We're not going to settle for just peace. We're going to have to be victorious.
Which you know, that's something. I mean, whenever we've heard, and I talked to my earlier guest, and the big thing in the Civil War was you know, union, or you know, that we're fighting for union. And for me, fighting for union, that's not enough. That's not a good enough answer to kill the guy over there. That, you know, they've got to be a union. You've got to be together as one country, and that therefore you got to kill that guy. I mean, to me, and that's what that wasn't a good enough answer. But I think, obviously, Lincoln provided a little bit more of an answer in the course of the war. Anyway, so give us some of the other maybe. I know you mentioned that I have a dream speech. Obviously, a great speech.
Oh, yeah, incredible speech.
Can you give us some other lesser-known lights of episodes that might be surprising?
I mean, to your point, you have to have the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. But we did include a couple of ones that people probably don't think of initially. We included a letter from Abigail Adams. During the Revolutionary War, and she's known, but she's not as well known. But it does show off both her intellectual ability, her relationship she had with her husband John, and how much influence there were. Even in an era where women weren't very well known and weren't out in the forefront, clearly they had.
What was she saying in the letter?
Impact.
What is she saying in the letter?
But if you look at the whole correspondence, she was back at home tending to the farm and the family and everything, and he was obviously trying to figure out what kind of government we're going to have. And this ongoing dialogue, and he'd send her papers like Common Sense so she could read what was happening with the political side, and she would send him letters like, for instance, she'd say, if we're going to have a new government, what should it look like? What will it be like? What will it, you know, how will it be, how will it function? And then she would remind him on occasion, which I think is still applicable today, are you, you know, you guys over there, do you still remember us? Do you remember the people out here, the people that are actually working every day and out? And that's still applicable, I think, today, you know, the people in Washington. Do you remember the people that are still working? But the letter that we have in here is the one that says, remember the ladies. You have to remember the ladies and what you set up and structure. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a long time, and clearly we've come a long way. But she's a very interesting character because she's highly educated. She's very thoughtful. He was clearly attracted by her intelligence. And they did have a very equal partnership.
Yeah, and I've read some of those letters by Babigail Adams, and certainly she's – I never got through the entire the recent John Adams bio by McCulloch, but I read some of it. And obviously she was really, really sharp. Any other
There are a couple other ones. One is a phrase that I knew well, but I didn't know the background. And part of the joy of putting this book together is I did read a lot and research a lot, and I've always loved to read. But it's the Captain Mosley Baker's speech to remember the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the phrase, but I didn't know the whole history
now,
behind
now that
it.
Happened like 6 months later, right? Like,
it happened afterwards, and it's interesting. I mean, when you read the whole background of what was happening, and you had Santa Anna that took away the rights, and then and they were trying to pull away, and there was fighting, and then they had the Alamo. What you have is you have an understanding, first of all, of why Texans were so independent. But in this very short speech, before they went into battle, you see shades of
things. Let's back up for a second.
Later.
So the Alamo falls in 1836. I mean, they get surrounded by overwhelming odds, and they have a chance to leave the Alamo. And they Santa says, "You can leave if you want to." And the leaders, I forget the military leader of the Alamo. Does anyone want to leave? And nobody leaves, and they fight to the death, and then. But that's just one battle. Now there's still a whole bunch of Texans who are not Americans. Well, they were Americans originally, but they're living in a state of Mexico. And what happens? So what's going on at that point when he makes a speech?
So what happens is they're about to fight Santa Anna's army. So they're in, and they've had, to your point, they've had the Alamo. They've had another massacre as well in Guadalupe, where they actually the rebels, which are the best, you know, the ones that are trying to be free,
right,
were surrendered, but instead of being, you know, either captured, they were actually slaughtered.
Ooh.
So he gave this speech. They finally are going to, they've been marching around for a long time. He had both these armies, you know, marching around, figuring out where they're going to finally do battle. And when it finally comes to it, they're ready, and they know they're about to go in. And Santa Anna's army assumed that they would not fight. So they were actually having a siesta. I mean, they were taking a nap. But they give, Captain Mosley Baker gives this great, and it's not a very long.
Always attack the Mexican army at 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
You got to love that, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not a very long speech. It's a page and a quarter, so it's a very short speech. But what it also does, it gives shades of things we hear later, because he reminds these men that they're the last best hope for Texas, which is also, you know, shades of things that we hear later on.
So is that where we get the line, last best hope for freedom?
Exactly. So
okay.
It's a really interesting little speech that reminds us that, you know, and then they finally, when they're independent and they're their own, and then finally.
Now, who gives the speech? What was the name?
We don't attack them. We don't take them. They decide to join us. So it's a very different, you know, group of people than somebody else.
Well, who was the guy that gave the speech?
It was Captain Mosley Baker.
Captain Mosley Baker. So he's a captain.
Yeah, exactly. He's not even, you know, he's not even the general in charge. He's a captain. But he knew he had to get his people fired up, and he did.
Right. And then it was shortly thereafter, and there was the big victory was a few months later by, not Austin, who was the other guy, Sam Houston, made the big victory to establish the state of Texas.
I mean, captured Santa Anna after here, because Santa Anna fled after this little battle, and they found him a little bit later, because he ran out and tried to hide in disguise, but he didn't change. I can't remember if it was his cufflinks or his buttons, but one of the two, he still had on the all the jewels.
Okay.
And so he was caught by the jewels. You got to be careful if you want to fit in with the soldiers. You got to look like a soldier.
Oh, that's right. I do recall that story. About yeah, he was trying to hide out, but I do recall that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're gonna hide out like look like a common soldier, you gotta actually look like a common soldier.
And then you know, Americans. I've always had a real hard time with Americans generally. Don't know their history, which I think is terrible. And you know, I've traveled the world. Not I'm a huge world traveler, but I've been surprised when I've traveled the world. I have found that oftentimes non-Americans know more American history than Americans, and of course they know their own history too. And I don't know, something about the American way of life. We do emphasize the modern, the changing. We don't have a lot of grounding to our places because we tend to move a lot, and our places tend to be somewhat scrubbed, and kind of the landscape tends to get similar. So people don't know, have any conception of, you know, regional history or history. But you know, we need to change that.
I think you're right. We're a forward-looking nation, which I think, which in a lot of ways is good because you don't sit around and get sad about what happened. But to your point, there are some really good themes. There are some really good lessons, and that's a large part of why I put together the Essential American. It's because to me they're like nation stories. And in my family, I have a 11 and a 9-year-old. We tell stories in our family about our family members so we can pass on values. Mm-hmm. Specifically, and I'm sure you probably, you know, we say specific stories.
Yeah.
And these are our national stories, and they talk about certain things. They talk about perseverance. They talk about hard work. They talk about sacrifice. So it's these national stories, and I think it's important not only we remember and tell them, but that we emphasize certain things that we can share those values of the nation.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of great stories. There are lots of great stories, but... and I think the history of America, when you really get into it and even get past the gloss of it and the textbook version of it, it gets much more complex and much more interesting. Like just to give you an example, I read a story once, and this is you know, at one point in 1783, after the war was over, New York City was the last bastion of British rule in the on the continent. They were still writing the treaty, and the British were still here, and they had a lot of slaves who had fought for the British, who had fled to New York to say, you know, take us with you when you go, because if we go, I don't want to go back to my slave owner.
Right.
And they were, and George Washington was tasked with negotiating to get those slaves back. And, you know, that's something that, you know, so he said, look, okay, we want to sign a peace treaty, we want you guys to go back and we want to end the war, but give us our slaves back. And that, you know, that's not making it on a highlight reel of U.S. history. But when you actually even get down to it, you can get the characters, and Washington didn't want to do it. He was not happy about doing it at all. But he did it to keep the country together,
right,
because some of the people in his constituents demanded it.
Yeah, and and Washington was interesting, and I included his farewell address because he was very much, he believed that we as a people could didn't need a master, didn't need a monarch, that we actually could rule ourselves and weren't made for a master. And he was very much for country, as he pointed out, and not for party. And part of what he really talked about in his farewell address is how we need to be very careful about foreign influence, about political parties, and about putting ourselves in debt in a situation that, you know, we would be forced to do certain things.
Interestingly enough,
you're familiar with, right?
He talked about party, get away from party, but his successor, John Adams, was crushed by parties.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and after that, you see lots of political...
Yeah, and
during his time, even, there's a lot of political maneuvering, which is part of why
I think we're getting crushed by parties, too. Anyway, thanks for joining us. You know, what do you think? Last question. What do you think? Do you have a lot of interest? I mean, do you think the Republicans, they're going to make going to hit the ground running in the new Congress, or do you think they're showing a little bit too much bluster right now?
Well, you know, I certainly hope they do. I think clearly the last election was a very clear signal that that American people want to have their voices heard and want to have fiscal conservatism and want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And I think, you know, you don't know until it happens.
Oops, I overstepped. We got to go to a break. I'm sorry, Jackie. Hey, thanks for joining us. We'll be back for a couple more calls on the Peter Schiff Show. Thanks a lot, Jackie.
Thank
Get the
you.
Book. Okay, Essential Americans, 25 Documents and Speeches Every American Should Read.